This is Bill Powers with MiningStockEducation.com, and with me on the line is a special guest, Don Durrett. Don is a mining stock investor who has also written a book on the subject. And before I introduce Don further, I'd like to share a little bit about how I came into investing in mining stocks. For years, I would always look for investment vehicles that would offer me high returns, whether that was real estate or what have you. I was always interested in picking up books on the topic and looking for new opportunities. And it was around 2012 or 2013 where I really got turned on to precious metals, that being gold and silver, particularly for the threat or the possibility of a currency collapse, issues in our banking system, and a lot of the dire economic things that were going on in our nation kind of steered me towards my interest in investing in gold and silver. And then as silver and gold really declined from 2011 through December of 2015, at the end of 2015, I was looking at how far they had dropped, and I was thinking to myself, I think silver is one of the best investments on the planet, at least that I could see at the time. So then I looked for leveraged ways to make money off of what I perceived to be the depressed price of silver, and that is what eventually led me into silver miners. So in the third week of January in 2016, which really was the bottom of the silver mining shares, I invested in silver producers and also silver miners. And if you followed that market in 2016, you know that for the first half of the year, it was roaring straight up. And so I saw some positions go up as much as 10 times in 6 months. And that really got my attention. And it was in the summer of 2016 that I decided, you know what, I need to devote more time and money to studying and developing myself to be successful in natural resource investing, because during an up market with the right companies, I experienced firsthand that it is extremely powerful what that can do for your wealth. And that's what led me to Don's book. Don's book is entitled How to Invest in Gold and Silver, A Complete Guide with a Focus on Mining Stocks. I went out and purchased hundreds of dollars of books. Don's book was one of them. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's almost like Don sitting down with you, having a cup of coffee, the way he relates it. He's just sharing with you his stories, his experience, how he invests, offering tips and advice in really a non-technical way that anybody could understand. It was very easy to grasp and to apply to my personal investing. I have other books that are very technical, and they take me a lot longer to read because I'm not familiar with all of the language and some of the things the authors are talking about. But Don's book, on the contrary, was very easy for me to grasp and implement right away. I also found Don's his YouTube channel very helpful. I watched his PowerPoint presentations on mining stock investing a number of times. So I asked Don to come on today to share his experience as a mining stock investor, also what he sees going on in the gold and silver markets, in the markets in general. A couple more things about Don. Don is a contributor writing articles for SeekingAlpha.com, and he also has a website that is very helpful. There's a small subscription price to it, but it's very helpful for investors, and that address is GoldStockData.com. With that being said, I'd like to bring Don onto the program. Don, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Don, would you mind, is there anything you wanted to start off with other than your journey, your testimony into mining stocks in light of what I've said?
Well, I guess we can start there because that kind of explains where the book came from. So I started investing in gold back in the early 1990s. And the reason why is I read a book, kind of an odd way to get into gold mining. And the premise of the book was that the United States economy and the United States as a country was in its decline. And that kind of resonated with me because I saw back in the 1980s how Ronald Reagan was increasing the debt at a high rate. And I used to tell my dad that, you know, that's not sustainable. We can't just keep adding debt and expect our country to be strong economically. So when I heard that, I decided if I didn't have comfort, if you will, in stocks and bonds. The only thing I had comfort in was gold. And so I became the only two things I really liked is gold and silver, because those were, that was my comfort level. So I started investing in stocks, and I started looking for books on how to invest, especially junior miners. I started looking to find if there was a book available for junior miners, and I couldn't find one.
This is in the 80s you're referring to?
Actually, no. When I started investing in the junior miners, this was 2004. I started investing in gold and silver back in the 1990s, but the junior miners I didn't get involved in until 2004. I was investing in the mutual funds, but in order to invest in silver, I couldn't invest. There was no mutual funds for silver. So I had to learn how to invest in silver mining stocks. So that's got me in 2004. So 2004, I started looking for book. Literally, there was none. None. There was nothing out there for junior miners. I couldn't find one. There was plenty of data on the internet, but there was no books. And so in order to learn the internet, you had to kind of, you know, do what you did, you know, look on YouTube channels and learn kind of one at a time. But I wanted a kind of a condensed book. So I couldn't write it on my own in 2004 because I was just learning. So I wrote the book in 2010. So I waited 6 years until I knew how to do it. And it, and so that book is literally the culmination of an investor learning how to do this. So I've bought well over 100 gold and silver mining stocks, and I've watched them go up and down. So and I've invested the entire spectrum. So that's what my book does. My book covers the entire spectrum from majors to juniors. And I split the juniors into categories. So I have like 9 categories for juniors in order to differentiate the risk. And so that's what I do in my book. I help people to understand the risk of junior miners.
Absolutely. When you invested in 2004, did you sell off in 2008 before everything crashed, or did you ride it down and then back up through 2011?
That's a good question. So my exit strategy has always been to wait until we have kind of the blow-off rally. And I did not believe that 2008 or 2012 were blow-off rallies. So I'm still waiting. I have an exit point, and we're not there yet. We still have a ways to go. But, yes, and I feel that everybody should have an exit strategy, and I explain that in my book. But we're not there yet. So what I've done is that I basically have been a buy and hold, but I always buy stocks during these declines. So we've had this, you know, we had a significant decline 2008-9, especially 2009. January 2009 was an unbelievable opportunity to buy stocks. And so I basically, instead of selling, I was buying more. And then I bought all the way from 2014 all the way to 2016.
And do you still hold positions that you bought in 2004? You still hold today?
I do.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, my initial investment back in the 1990s, Gold Mutual Fund, my cost basis is zero because the dividends have basically paid for that mutual fund because I sold it. And I don't plan to sell it. I'll just keep collecting the dividends and wait for until we get. So my exit strategy is I want to get out of my silver stocks first because I feel that silver actually has higher risk than gold. Now, I will say you mentioned that you thought silver was one of the best investments. I agree. I think that physical silver is one of the best investments you can make. That being said, there's also a lot of risk involved with silver just because of the sheer volume of the annual silver mine. I mean, they mine 800 million ounces a year, so it has a high volume. So if we have any type of economic, you know, calamity of any type, your silver supply is going to go through the roof very quickly, and so you can get a crash in silver. If investors don't buy it up. And then you have, you know, 300 million ounces in SLV, and there's always a possibility that the government, if we do have a silver shortage, let's say silver goes up to 100, 125, and you get a shortage, the government could basically say silver is a strategic metal, and we're no longer going to allow ETFs. And they make all the ETFs basically sell their silver. If they did that, the price of silver would drop overnight, you know, $50. You don't have those risks in gold. So I'm going to start selling my silver somewhere north of 50, maybe 50, but every $25. So say $50 silver, 75, 100, 125, 150. Every one of those for me is a sell point for my silver miners. And you were very lucky that you bought silver producers back in early 2016, because that was probably the last time that you're going to be able to buy silver producers at those prices. I mean, McEwen Mining got under a dollar. Endeavor Silver got down to under $1.25. These prices were amazing. I was telling my members on my website that you need to buy these silver producers because the potential upside of these stocks is amazing. I mean, one of my best investments was in 2009. I bought a silver producer, First Majestic, for under $1.25. I think I paid $1.15 for it. It went all the way to $28. And it probably would have went all the way to 50 if silver would have busted through $50 an ounce. So these silver producers, there's just not that many of them. I mean, there's really only about 10 strong silver producers. So if we get $50, $100 silver, the leverage on these mining stocks is phenomenal.
Don, with silver and all times highs, you mentioned a sell point, you know, or your exit would be 50 and above, which would be an all-time high for silver. What's your time frame on that? What is your expectation? And do you think we can get there without some sort of hyperinflation situation that will, you know, cause silver to skyrocket like it did in the late 70s?
Oh, absolutely. You could get silver to break out without a hyperinflationary event. With a hyperinflationary event, then you're probably going to see silver, you know, it'll run so quickly, it'll make your head spin. But without a hyperinflationary event, and the reason why is because the very limited amount of silver that's available. The physical silver that's above ground, that's for sale at this moment, is well, well less than 100 million ounces available. And so if you put that at $20, that's $20 billion of silver. And I'm saying it's a lot less than that that's available for sale at the moment. You're looking at the amount of silver that's available, physically available for sale, is probably less than $10 billion. I mean, it's just nothing. And it's a global market. And so people could soak that up, and you could have basically a shortage situation. So silver can run really, really rapidly. And the reason why I like silver so much is if you look at the chart, the silver chart, there really isn't any resistance once you get to about $27. So once it gets to about 27 and gets closed above 27, it's probably going to run to 50 fairly quickly, no matter what. I mean, hyperinflation, a little bit of inflation, very little demand. Just the chart alone is going to create momentum. And so once it's not going to be easy, and I've always said this, it's not going to be easy to get to 27. But once we get there, I mean, it might take us 2 more years to get to 27. It might take 3 months to get to 27. But once we get to 27, we're probably going to run to 50 fairly quickly. Then it's going to be all about the fundamentals. Now, getting past 50 is another story. That's where the fundamentals are going to come into play.
Mm-hmm. And do you see 50 being hit in about a 3 to 5 year time frame? Would that be your estimate?
$50 silver?
$50 silver, yes.
Well, again, we have all these factors that could push silver higher fairly rapid. Now, the big, kind of the outlier, if you will, is a silver shortage. The COMEX, we're always hearing about the COMEX. There just isn't enough physical silver in COMEX to really cover if somebody wants to, take delivery. So there's always that possibility where you could get a shortage. Now, that could happen at any moment. That's kind of the outlier. But the other thing for me is if you look at what happened from 2001 till, say, 2008 and all the way up to 2012, you had this massive rally, bull market rally in gold and silver. And that rally basically faltered right around 2012. And the reason why it faltered, in my opinion, was if you go back to 9/11 in 2001, the economy basically started to falter in the United States. I basically submit that the United States economy is kind of the whole, is basically holding the entire U.S. economy, global economy up. And about 1995 is when I think everything kind of peaked. You can make an argument that it went all the way to 98, somewhere in there. But the United States economy really stopped generating a lot of wealth once you got through the 90s. And then you got to 9/11 in 2000, and the U.S. was basically depending on debt to grow. And so you had the recession right after 2001, and that's when debt started exploding. You know, George Bush came in and he started, you know, the war in Iraq, and you had all this deficit spending. And that deficit spending was helping, you know, to fund the war, but it was also helping to fund the government, fund the economy. And so you had low interest rates, and you had the housing bubble kick off in 2002, 2003, 2004. The bubble started happening there. And the reason why, we had low interest rates, higher debt, but simultaneous to that, you had a lot of risk in the economy. And that's what it kind of – that's what put the fire underneath gold and silver. So you had this bull market in gold and silver started to take off in the early 2000s. Well, then you had the crash in 2008, 2009, and then gold basically kind of exploded because you had that – weakness, the wall worry, the weakness in the economy, kind of it made that final push up to 2012, and you had gold go all the way to 1935. And then after 2012, the economy did not crash. So a lot of people thought after 2008, 2009, where you had, you know, the Lehman event, you started to think that the things were going to falter and crash. And so gold made its run there, but then things started to stabilize. And we have had a stable government, a stable economy from basically from 2009 until today. And so we haven't had the fear trade. The fear trade has basically been somewhat muzzled. And that muzzling is basically we're getting an inflection point right here. And once the fear trade kind of kicks back in, which I think that's what I say, $27. So right now we're climbing the wall of worry, and so investors are basically kind of trying to ignore gold, trying to ignore silver, but we're starting to see more and more people start to recognize the inherent value in those commodities. And so once you get to, in my opinion, once we get past 27, get through that wall of worry, the fear trade will be back on, and so that's when you're going to get this run, another run, if you will, in silver from 27 to 50. It'll happen fast. It'll happen. Last time it took 6 months. I think this time it'll take less than 6 months. So how long will it take to get to 50? Well, the key is going to be how long it takes to get to 27. And again, it could happen this year, maybe not. I don't expect it to this year. But next year, 2018, we'll see where we're at. But the trend, in my opinion, is up, because if you look at the U.S. economy, it's very weak at this point in time. We can go over that.
I have one question about silver before we move on to the U.S. economy. Regarding all the silver manipulation cases that have come out and been settled, what are your thoughts on that? And do you think about the manipulation of the spot price through futures contracts as an investor? How does that affect you as an investor? And what are your thoughts in general?
Well, it's very evident that the markets are manipulated. One website that I follow, it's actually a membership site, is Turd Ferguson's TF Metals Report. Mm-hmm. And he does a fabulous job of showing you how everything is basically manipulated and controlled. I mean, you watch these markets and they trade one for one. I mean, penny for penny. For instance, the gold versus yen. So who's leading who? You know, is it, you know, the tail's wagging the dog kind of thing. And he shows example after example how these markets are so unbelievably connected, correlated. And then he shows, and I've been following this for years actually, and he'll show how during these trading days, how certain levels, technical levels, are basically supported. And you know that most of these markets are traded by the high-frequency traders. So the computers, the bots, are basically – traded. They're basically programmed to say, if it hits a 200-day moving level, don't let it go lower. And so you'll watch the yen, and the yen will basically go down to certain thresholds on these technical charts, and it just gets absolutely frozen at that point. And the same with gold. And then gold will get correlated to the yen, so gold will basically get locked in, and silver too. So I've watched these markets become, you know, highly, highly manipulated. You can just watch the charts and see how it's done. I mean, and then a lot of the charts, what's happened is it gets, you can literally know it's coming, you know, like the after market hours, you know, how they kind of beat it up. They get the price that they want.
So if the bank, let's call them the banksters or the gold cartel, as Bill Murphy from Gata calls them, if they want to suppress price of silver and silver needs to break through 27 to get to 50, do we need the demand from Shanghai? Is it going to be an arbitrage situation where the people in Shanghai will say, okay, we'll demand physical delivery on the COMEX, take it over to Shanghai and sell it physically there? Is it going to be physical demand, whether it comes from Shanghai or the American people, physical demand, is that what it's going to be to break through 27, or can that happen even while we acknowledge there is manipulation going on?
Yeah, you're on the right track. So that's what allows the fear trade to kick in. This is the reason why silver was able to get to $50. And so the manipulators, they only have so many bullets, and they can only fire so many, and they get overran. But they can only get overran for a certain period. And a lot of times, once they get overran, they just let it go. And that's how you had that run from 27 to 50 last time. And it really wasn't, you know, I really feel that gold is kind of the big dog or the big brother, and silver's the little sister. I really feel that gold leads. So I feel that kind of gold got out of control last time, and they couldn't control gold, and they kind of just let it go, and then it got all the way to 1935. But if you look at that gold chart, it is amazing how ruthlessly it got pounded back down. It's very interesting if you go and look at that. And so, you know, who was pounding it down? So somebody, they let it go, but then once it got up to that level, they had a plan in place that they were going to knock it back down. And so, because they have a lot of bullets, but they run out of ammunition during a single day. They can't just, you know, they can't control the price completely. They can control it to a certain extent. And so they just beat it down. I mean, you watch, if you look at the charts, how it they slowly and methodically got it down to where it is today. They basically they've been in control since 2012, 2013. But I really feel they're going to lose control again. Now, right now, they do not want to see silver get through 1850. And they do not want to see gold get through 1309. These are really, really important levels. And to me, silver's going to follow gold. So 1309, that's really the number I look at right now in the near term. So the first half of this year, gold's going to have a hard time busting through 1309. And the reason why 1309 is so important is that was the 200-day moving average that was kind of support on the way back down. So gold got all the way to like 1370, I think, somewhere around 1370 last year in August. And then it came back down, and 1309 was kind of the line in the sand. If it could have bounced off 1309, it would have went higher than 1370. This is basically the way the technicals work. But 1309 did not hold. It tried. It was there for about a month, and then it broke down. And so now that's become resistance. What is support becomes resistance. So it's going to be severe resistance to get through 1309. If we get through 1309 this year, it's really possible that we are back in a bull market. We're right at – the gold right now is right at the 200-day moving average. It just got through the 200-day or the 200-weekly moving average, which was about 245. We're through that right now. No, we're a little bit below it, 1240. No, we're a little higher. It's right at 1245. That's a significant level. But an even more important level is 1265. And so if we bounce above both of those guys and get over 1309, trust me, that is going to be a green light for gold and silver to kind of run, if you will. And I think it might happen in April or May. So just keep an eye on 1309 in April and May, because we get through those levels, this five-year correction could be over, and we could be back in a bull market in both gold and silver. We're getting really close.
Okay, and you mentioned that fear drives gold, the fear trade, and you've also touched on current day events. You mentioned the U.S. economy is weak. Could you share more thoughts of how you see the political situation currently in America and also the U.S. economy, how that affects gold and silver?
There's kind of two subjects there, and I'll go ahead and go at both of them. So the first one is kind of the political situation in the U.S. And I really feel that Trump is kind of in an untenable situation. I always felt that for some odd reason, I always thought that foreign policy was going to really dictate how much kind of strength Trump would have in the local, in the U.S. Political situation. And I think that the foreign policy, when he lost Flynn was, I really thought he was really crucial, because Flynn recognized that, like I do, that the whole key to stabilizing the global political situation, which is kind of falling out of control, was to make nice with Russia. We had to make Russia our ally so that Russia, ourselves and Russia, could basically kind of clean up the Middle East, make better relations with Europe, and basically ally with Russia to not let China to kind of get out of hand. So the U.S.-Russia relationship was just crucial, and Flynn was the one guy that was going to kind of help him do that. Now, it was really, really bad when Rex Tillerson, the first speech he gave, basically said that we're not going to allow China to build islands in the South China Sea. So basically picked a fight with China right off the bat. I said, oh, no, that's not a good sign. Then Nikki Haley, who's the and she gives her first speech and basically says that Russia, we're not going to lift the sanctions against Russia. Now, that should have came out of Trump's mouth, not Nikki Haley's mouth. That is such a serious statement. And then Trump said that Nikki Haley was speaking for him, or the Trump administration. I don't think Trump said it, but the Trump administration said that Nikki Haley was speaking for the administration. And then Trump basically came out and said, yes, to a certain extent, that that Russia has to give back Crimea. Well, Russia didn't take Crimea. The Crimean people voted to basically secede. So right now we are basically picking a fight with Russia, which I think is basically going to create a mess of our foreign policy. And I don't think Trump's going to be able to get the genie back in the bottle. Now his new national security guy, McMasters, is basically kind of an anti-Russia guy, saying that Russia is our enemy, if you will. Kind of a quote from him this week. And so now we take that back to the U.S. So Trump is not getting any kudos for his foreign policy. He's not getting any kind of momentum out of his foreign policy. I always thought that if he got his foreign policy, if he got his ducks in his row there, then he could kind of fix the U.S. economy. So I think this is kind of showing me that we're going to get the same foreign policy as Obama gave us, which is basically a big mess. If you have a mess in foreign policy, you're going to have a mess in trade. So I just don't think that Trump is going to be able to kind of fix the middle class's income problem. So we have a problem with our income. Restaurant spending, I was reading today on Zero Hedge, is basically flat to down year over year. So we have a kind of an earnings problem with our middle income, with middle class, and we have an earnings problem with our corporations. So our stock market is way overvalued and our earnings are not taking off, and I don't see them taking off. Right now the stock market is kind of hoping and wishing that Trump is going to lower taxes. He's not going to lower them this year. He might lower them next year. And so they're just hoping and praying. Well, the stock market is not going to be able to stay up for the next 12 months waiting for this tax bill to come in. So we're going to see I think we're going to see the stock market basically roll over at some time, which is basically not good for the economy.
If we do get a steep decline in the stock market, do you think it's going to be like late 2008, where the gold and silver equities fell with the stock market, or could you see them going in the other direction?
I see them going in the other direction, because last time gold and silver were basically kind of had the fear trade in place at that time. You had the fear trade pretty firmly in place since around 2004. and now it's off. So we're in a basically a pullback. So I think I could be wrong here, and we could see get a significant pullback in gold and silver and the miners. But I just feel that you're going to get a bid in gold and silver because they're so low. They've been kind of pushed down. And so I actually think that the fear trade will actually kick in once people start to get nervous. Now, you have to recognize that we are paying interest on $20 trillion in debt. $20 trillion. 8 years ago, it was $10 trillion. $20 trillion at 4% is $800 billion. We cannot afford 4% interest rates, which is really the natural norm for 10-year, the 10-year. So if interest rates spike, we're in trouble. And so investors know this. So you're going to start to see the fear trade kick in. You're going to start to see gold and silver get more of a bid because of the economic situation. Now, I will admit that as of today, the fundamentals look pretty good. The PMI numbers are at 54. I don't know if everybody that watches this or listens to this knows what a PMI, but the PMI is basically a Purchasing Managers Index, and it gives you one of the best numbers for kind of the strength of the U.S. economy. It's kind of anything over 50 kind of shows you that kind of the heart and soul of the economy is functioning, if you will. And so the PMI is at 54. That's not a recession number. The other one, autos are last year was at 17.5 million autos. I mean, cars and trucks. That was an all time record. And it's only down 1.8% in January. So we're selling a lot of cars right now. Housing was up in January, up 3.3% existing home sales, and prices were up 7% year on year to $228,000, which is higher nominally than the bubble in 2008. The high in 2008 was $225,000. So housing is basically fairly strong. Right now, it only takes 50 days to sell your house, the average in the country. That's low. So as of right now, and we're speaking, the economy is fairly stable. But simultaneous to that, everything could go south fairly quickly. And I think people recognize this. We've never, ever – I mean, I've been following this since 1980. We have never been this precarious situation. You have all the large economies in the world are basically unstable. You have Europe. Europe, right now, going into 2017, is basically in a very in a situation where they don't know. They really don't know where they're going. They got to get through 2017. You have Greece right now. You have Germany and Greece today on Zero Hedge. Basically, Germany said we're not going to take a haircut on our debt. We're not going to basically – our banks can't take it is basically what they're saying. The Netherlands, Italy, France are all having major elections this year. So Europe anything negative out of Europe this year could basically create some type of an economic event that can make everything go south, if you will.
Don, I'd like to ask you, last year there was an article that came out. I can't remember if it was the Central Bank of Switzerland or Sweden, but they purchased just a load of mining shares. And some speculation I heard both ways. One person speculated, well, they're buying that so that they can just flood the market and crash the mining share prices at the desired time. Other speculators said, no, they're buying it because they see gold and silver going high. They don't own physical gold and silver, so they want to profit via the mining shares. Do you have any thoughts to share on that?
Yeah. The country was Switzerland, and I think they were just doing it to make a profit. I think they just saw it as an opportunity, and they still own a lot of those shares. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the central banks are out there buying stocks. The U.S. Fed is not, but Janet Yellen said that it's definitely something that they're considering doing, which is, you know, kind of crazy. So Japan, I mean, Japan, they own their ETF market. The Japanese government owns more than 25% of all the ETF. I mean, that's a conservative number. I think it's higher than that. I mean, it's just insane that these banks are basically supporting these markets. We've never had this before. Never. I mean, if you look at the balance sheets in Japan and Europe, the United States, of how much, you know, assets are on these central bank balance sheets is it's pretty crazy. Another absolutely kind of insane number was in January in China, their net debt addition was $540 billion. That was in a single month. That's the equivalent of $6.5 trillion in a single year of added debt. So China, China's not doing so fabulously well. Now, so that's why I think that if you're a gold and silver investor, that you have to basically kind of think in kind of a long you want to basically position, especially in the producers. The producers, I think, have kind of the lowest risk. Just because the levers that you have, if this stuff kind of goes south, and you know, I've been following this stuff for years and years, and I've never seen it this precarious. And the irony of all this is that, I mean, if we go back to Trump and the U.S. economy, which is 25% of the global economy, I mean, it's just U.S. economy is just, you know, it's totally the gorilla in the room as far as impact goes. And the U.S. is everybody thinks that, you know, Trump's going to turn this around. And I think it's a mirage. I really do, because, again, I thought his only choice of doing that was through foreign policy. And I don't think he's going to be able to basically clean up. I think foreign policy is going to be as big a mess for him as it was for Obama. And we're getting really close here to some significant negative events. And when things go south this time, I totally agree with, you know, most of the prognosticators out there that say that it's going to be worse this time than 2008, I firmly agree with that opinion.
But you could see gold and silver going in a different direction rather than falling like we discussed in 2008. So if somebody's just getting into mining investing and you were sitting down having a cup of coffee with them, what would be 3 to 5 key things that you would recommend to them?
I would tell them to not to buy individual stocks. I would tell them to buy ETFs, and I would tell them that, you know, the ones that tell them the differences is that you want to look at the ETFs, you know, the size of the miners. Like GDX is basically your majors where you're going to get some dividends, and GDXJ is your mid tiers. And there really isn't a small ETF out there for kind of the small stocks, except for SILJ, which is kind of a junior silver ETF, which is kind of one of my favorite ones. So you have the SIL ETF, which is kind of a mid-tier silver producer, mid-tiers, mostly silver producers and major. There really isn't that many major silver producers. Then SILJ, which is mid-tier and junior, and then GDX, GDXJ. I would say just focus on those four ETFs as far as mining companies. And stay away from individual stocks unless you want to – if you are going to do it, and these are for new people who aren't in it. And then the other thing I say I want you to do is get a hold of physical silver, especially under $18. I just feel like $18 is kind of the free – anything under $18 is kind of risk-free, if you will. I just don't see silver. It's going to go over $18 probably this year and never go under it again in our lifetime. So buying it under 18, physical silver. Now, the way to get physical silver is I think 10-ounce silver bars is probably the best way to go as far as a premium goes. You want to get the 10-ounce bars and just look kind of for the best ones out there. But you don't want to get too – you want to get – it's kind of good to get some brand name ones, but you don't want to pay too much extra. There's going to be different price points. Ones that are basically don't have any brand name recognition would be the cheapest ones. The ones with the best brand names are going to have a higher premium. You want to get maybe somewhere in the middle. And then Silver Eagle coins, it depends what country you're in. You know, if you're in Canada, buy the Maples. You're in the U.S., buy the Eagles. And I like junk silver too. You might consider buying some Mercury dimes or some Ben Franklin half dollars and some Kennedy half dollars. I like those. So if you're starting out, that's really the kind of the way to go. And we can talk a little bit about people that are already investing some things as well. If you want to
for the more, yeah, absolutely. For the more experienced investor, what would be your advice at this point in history?
Okay, so if you're the more let's say you own a few mining stocks, but you're not an expert. You're still learning, if you will. Buy my book. That's the first thing that I would say. Because my book is written by somebody that's been there and done that kind of thing, and it basically covers everything. There's a chapter on junior miners that's about 70 pages long. It's really in depth and covers things. You know, the one thing, it's tough. It takes at least two years to learn this stuff, because there's so many gotchas that it's unbelievable how many gotchas there are. So many risk factors. So much stuff you need to know. I mean, properties alone. I mean, there's like 10 data points that you need to know just on properties alone. And then valuations, you know, how do you value these companies? You can't learn this stuff overnight. You know, what are you looking for as far as people, you know, management? I mean, how do you find a good management team? Stuff like this is, you know, you just can't learn this stuff overnight. I mean, I could sit here and give you 5 minutes about what to look for in a management team, but we can't do that in one, podcast. I mean, I hear a lot of people will give a few little hints and things about, okay, always look for, you know, this few things about properties, people, you know, projects. They're always talking about it. That's kind of my three P's as well. But, you know, if you really want to learn this stuff, I mean, you got to read a book, you got to do your research, you got to learn this stuff. I mean, you know, share structuring. I mean, what does it mean? You know, how long does it take to build a mine? Market cap size, balance sheets. I cover all this stuff in my book, and it's better to read if you're serious about the. I mean, if you own some stocks and you really don't know all this stuff inside and out, just read the book. I mean, it's gonna really help you.
And Don, could you talk about what your website offers investors as well, please?
Yeah. So how I got the website. So first I got into mining. First I started mutual funds. Then I went to the juniors. Then I wrote the book. And then after I wrote the book, I decided, well, might as well do a website. So I created a website. First, it was originally goldsilverdata.com, but I have a partner in it, and he basically does the design of the website. He's a developer, and I do all the analysis. So there, I think it's the best website for anybody that's investing in mining stocks, especially junior mining stocks. So first of all, it's very in-depth, if you will. So that's why it's called Gold Stock Data. There's unbelievable amounts of data in this website. And the companies. So I have over 650 gold and silver mining stocks in my database. And the search engine in the database is amazing. So if you want to find a company by all these different data points, you can search and you can find a list of those companies, and you're going to get a spreadsheet. Well, the outcome on the screen of a lot of data.
It helps you. Well, you give your advice or analysis on that company. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you also give your valuations using the formulas that you lay out in the book. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's, I mean, if this would have been the website I would have loved to have had when I was first starting out in miners. So every single stock I analyze. I analyze them. I have a little criteria that I use. Most stocks are analyzed once a year. Stocks on my website, in my newsletter, I do twice a year. Some of them I do every 9 months. But I do an analysis. So you get a one-page analysis or a half-page analysis, sometimes just a paragraph if it's a small company, analysis by me. And you get all the data associated with it, and you get a rating. So I rate every stock, and the ratings are basically your upside potential, and you get a risk level and the category, and then you get your valuation. So there's a future valuation, what I think that stock's going to be valued out in the future. And there's actually a score as well. So there's just tons of data on the website. I mean, it's really, really useful, especially for people that are looking for opportunities. I mean, you can go on the website and look like exploration companies. You can say, show me all the exploration companies that are rated 2.5 or 2.0, and you can go and you can look for them. And then I have all these links on the site, so you can go and do some additional due diligence of the companies. And then the newsletter, I have a newsletter that has a list of stocks to look at. So I really created the stock not so much to as a newsletter writer saying, okay, these are the best 10 stocks to buy. I do give lists, but the whole purpose of my website is for people to learn how to invest in this in these stuff, and then I help you find these stocks or help you give you leads, if you will. But I really created it for people that kind of know what they're doing or to get up to speed to know what they're doing. And then I have a forum. The forum is actually really, really good. I mean, it has a lot of information on there, a lot of people that are posting various videos and whatever. So you get all this stuff. So it's $150 a year, but the value is pretty amazing for only $150.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being with me today, Don. I appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.